Welcome to the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series, where your host, Andy Jacob, interviews leading entrepreneurs, founders, and CEOs about their incredible companies and discusses their unique entrepreneurial journeys. If you're the CEO or founder of an exciting and exceptional company, the editorial team of .com Magazine welcomes you to pitch your business story to appear on this exciting interview series by reaching out to Mr. Jacob at .com Magazine at .commagazine.com. And without further ado, here is another amazing entrepreneurial story on the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series.
Good afternoon, everyone. Andy Jacob here with the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series. I am so excited and delighted about today's show. You know, I have so many entrepreneurs, so many startup founders, even so many people that fund startups that reach out to me and they say, Andy, you know, what's the key to a startup? What's the key to having a great startup? So, of course, I went through my Rolodex in my brain and I decided to bring on someone that I know is really doing so well with his startup. His name is Jonathan Schroyer and he is the CEO of Officium Labs. And when I thought about it, I said to myself, you know, let's bring Jonathan on the show and let's entitle the show The Key to the Startup, because it's so interesting what Jonathan's been able to do. He has such a great background and experience in customer experience and really delivering a great customer service to world-class brands throughout the world. He's really unlocked the key on how to build a great startup. So Jonathan, thank you so much for coming through the Rolodex in my brain of the person I wanted to speak to for this show. And thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks, Andy. It's always a joy to chat with you and to listen to .com and some of the other interviews you have. So thanks for the opportunity today.
It's great to bring you back on the show. So we're entitling this show, The Key to the Startup. You're the person who I call the king of the startup. So let's start and let's pull the lens back a little bit, Jonathan, and just tell everybody about Officium to start with, and then we'll get into the key to the startup.
Oh, sounds good. Sounds good. I don't know if I'm the king, but I'll share some thoughts today. So Officium Labs is a startup. We've been in business for about 2 years. We started with four people, $150,000 loan, and we're just about to hit our two-year anniversary. Actually, I'm looking at the date there, and 4 days. And we've just amassed $10 million in revenue this month. So we went from $150,000 loan to $10 million in revenue in 2 years. And so it's been pretty amazing. But we're a service technology company, and we provide frontline services as well as SaaS technologies to companies to increase the ROI of their overall CX. So it's been pretty amazing.
I love it. It's such a great trajectory. And, you know, with all of your background and experience, Jonathan, it just makes all the sense in the world. You also have made an acquisition along the way. We'll get into that in a little bit. But when we think about, you know, taking yourself back a couple years, you know, when you borrowed the money and you started the company, for the younger entrepreneurs that reach out to me and say, Jake, you know, what's the key to the startup? What was going on through your mind at Officium at that point in time 2 years ago?
Well, the first thing when you start a company is there a reason or a purpose for your company, right? And when I say that, I don't mean should your company be existed because you want there to be a reason or purpose. Does the market indicate that there's a reason or a purpose? And so my co-founder and I, Scott, we walked through the streets of San Francisco, nice touch on the background, and we thought about how broken customer experience was, and we remember reading the Sarv.com, you know, survey and the report that talked about large companies, small companies are losing $339 billion a year because of poor customer experience. And so the first key in my perspective anyways of a startup is there a relevant reason why you need it? And do you have a good idea to be different or to disrupt? And so that's kind of the first key. So that's what Scott and I really thought about when we started Officium a couple of years ago.
I love it. So you walk the streets of San Francisco and you said to yourself, you know, what's the big need out here in customer experience? And you really knew based on your background and experience that if you could provide something better or different or something that was like lightning in a bottle, if you will, that you would have something. So let's talk about that a little bit. How long did it take for you to formulate Officium? I mean, was it done on the back of a napkin, or did it take weeks or months or years?
Well, it feels like it was done on the back of a napkin, but we were fortunate that some of our great shareholders are Forte and Rally. They're, you know, Forte is obviously a blockchain gaming platform. Rally's a blockchain kind of tokenization platform as well. That we incubated inside of those companies for about 4 or 5 months. And then we said, hey, we really feel like we have something. And so we spun out. And, you know, Kevin Chu was so gracious to give us a $150,000 loan. We pitched our idea. We told him about how services is broken and that we could build the future of it. And so we said, hey, we got four people. Let's go experiment. Let's go iterate. And let's go see if the market is ready for Officium. And Kevin believed in us, which is the second key to a startup is you have to have funders or other people that have vision or money that believe in you and that can help you be successful. And that's what really Forte, Rally, Kevin, and many others in that team was for us. They were believers in our vision, our mission, and what we wanted to do.
I love it so much, and that's awesome. And we want to get into that momentarily, but let's talk about the incubation process.
Yep.
What happened there, Jonathan? What did that feel like? What did that mean to you and your company as you were a younger startup 2 years ago?
Well, for us, it was important to build the model. So you have to build an operational model, right? And building an operational model inside of a larger company is much different than saying, hey, the operational model for an entire company. So you kind of have to build the operation model ground up. You learn a lot about, you know, gross revenue, gross profit, operating margin, all this kind of stuff, right? And then you have to look at the legal component, and you have to look at the HR component, and you have to look at you start to think about the client. How do we sell? How do we market? All of these, you know, bits and bobs, you know, it's great to have an incubation. So then you could build a model that is end to end. And actually we tested with a couple of clients, right? In the kind of month three or four of the incubation. And we're like, okay, we feel like this is something special. And I think that's because we had that incubation period, we had that opportunity to test the model a little bit before we kind of jumped mainstream.
I love it. And for the entrepreneurs that aren't really even sure, maybe they're not in Silicon Valley, New York, Miami, Texas, yeah. You know, maybe they don't really understand what the whole incubation model is. Could you just sort of describe what that is for the entrepreneurs watching the show?
Sure. So essentially, you know, when you incubate inside of another company, they essentially kind of fund your incubation, allow you to test the model out to see if it's going to work, not work. And then once they feel comfortable with it, then you kind of can go mainstream with it. So, you know, we were fortunate to incubate inside of a company. You know, a lot of, you know, startup founders, sometimes they do it as an evening job until they realize that, hey, this is actually my main job, right? And other founders, they have a great idea and they go to VCs and they get, you know, VC or seed or Series A kind of funding for it. So I think the avenue or the journey to becoming a founder is unique for each person.
I love it. So you're walking the streets of San Francisco with your co-founder. You're saying to yourself, there has to be a better way. This customer experience is broken. Let's figure out a way to fix that and deliver great brands and amazing customer service experience. You go into an incubator, you spend 3 to 4 months there. They really help you along the way to help figure out what the entire sort of ecosystem of Officium looks like. And then you have Kevin step in, and Kevin steps up at that point in time. So maybe you can explain that process, what happened with Kevin.
I mean, Kevin was the chairman over Rally and Forte. And so him and I had a conversation, and I said, hey, I'd like to build the decentralization of customer experience, because I believe a decentralized, and this is pre-COVID, obviously, I believe a decentralized workforce is the future of work. And I also believe if you can decentralize that and use the service stack framework that I invented, that we incubated on, then we could deliver ROI of CX. And if you combine decentralized work and ROI of CX and you put them together, then that's the future of service, which is obviously is our tagline for Ephysium. And Kevin's like, hey, let's do it and let's roll with it. And then so we, it was amazing to have some support and some backing. And, you know, I think one of the things that was critical to our success over the past couple of years was also two other keys to a startup for startup founders. The third key is your people. Who are you hiring? Who's on that lifeboat with you for that first kind of 4 to 5, 6 months, right? Who are the 5 to 10 people that you hire, and what are the roles that you hire? And I think that's going to be super critical for companies. And then I think the fourth key, and then we can dive into these as you'd like, Andy, the fourth key is clients. You have to get somebody to buy your product. They have to feel like that your product is valuable enough for them to want to purchase it. And then the renewal and keeping those clients happy and growing your business. Those are all kind of, those would be my four keys to the startups if a founder was to come up and ask me.
Well, I love it so much. And for the people watching this show, rewind what Jonathan just said. Try and say that 3 times in a row, because it's real interesting, those four key steps. Now, what was first? Was it the hiring the great team or your first paying customer? Which one came first?
So it was the team. So you have to build a strong foundation on people and culture, and assuming that you already have your idea, relevance, market fit research done, the team is critical. And then the team goes and acquires the clients. I mean, in the early days, it was me and Scott talking. We were sales and marketing. Obviously, now we have a wonderful CCO, John Pompey, and his team that does that. We've got Nate, who's our CXO, Chief Experience Officer, that you'll see out and about and around on, you know, on thought leadership tours and LinkedIn and Twitter and so forth. But it's all about building the team. And then you have the operations team with Sean Murphy and Kristen and so forth and so on. I mean, I could go through all the names. I'm not going to go through my entire company, but you have a diverse group of people that believe in that same vision, that are inspired to do the same thing. And then you can go after the clients.
I love it. I love it so much. It makes all the sense in the world. Now, Jonathan, what did it feel like? I don't like to get touchy-feely too much, but this is interesting for entrepreneurs watching the show and listening to the show on the podcast as well. Simul broadcast on the podcast networks. So what did it feel like the first time somebody said, I like what you're doing and I want to pay you? What did that feel like?
Well, I mean, it's validating, right? You're like, okay, so I've got one customer. I mean, if you're a data guy, which I'm a little bit of a data guy, one customer, a trend does not make, somebody told me earlier in my career. And so it's validating. And then you get that second one, and then you get that third one, and the fourth one, and the fifth one. And you're like, okay, I've really got something special here. So then it's about building brand credibility. You don't have brand credibility when you start up. So, I mean, that's not necessarily a key to being a founder in the beginning. But as you grow, you're gonna notice, like, hey, I'm like a small fish in a very big pond. So how do I build credibility over time? And the more that you sell, the more that you build value, the more credibility you bring to the market.
I love it. It makes all the sense in the world. And obviously, you've been able to develop and put together this world-class team at Ephysium. You speak about them all the time. Yeah. Really, they're the center of the universe, because without a great team, you can't provide the type of service that you've become known for already in the last 2 years at Ephysium. So let's talk about that, because, the corporate culture really starts at the top, Jonathan, and it starts at the top and it works its way through the entire organization. So for the younger entrepreneurs watching this show, and even perhaps for your own employees and the people that work alongside you and with you, what can you say to them about how important it is to really provide a world-class customer service to your clients?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at where the market's going and where choice is, consumers are spending their wallet based on and making their wallet decisions and changing their minds as often as they change the apps that they're looking at on their phone, right? And so when you think about, you know, a world-class team, you know, recently you noticed that we brought on Angela, our COO, because as we were scaling and growing, we knew that we needed to solidify our operations and our foundation and be able to continue to scale to that 10x number, right? So along the way, you know, a startup founder, oftentimes what will happen is they'll be a product founder, or they'll be a marketing founder, or and they'll focus on that. And then they'll be like, okay, when I have 2 million or 4 million or 6 million, then I'll think about service. For now, I'll just put it into a Gmail box, right? Well, the reality is you still, the minute that you have a paying customer, you need to have the type of service that you would want to get as a startup founder if you were buying it. So that's one of the beauties of the service stack, is that it provides a kind of a low cost mechanism for these startup founders to be able to access best in class customer service and deliver that from day one, which is what they want to do, but they're a little nervous because of that cost value return ratio. They're not profitable. They only have so much funds. There's these tensions, right? But the reality is customers build your company. And so you have to have those customers, and you have to have happy customers.
I love it. It makes all the sense in the world. Let's talk about Officium's like most likely candidate to be a client. Who's reaching out to you, and why are they reaching out to you right now?
We have three client kind of profiles. So the first one is the client who is interested in the connect part of our service stack. So like, hey, I've got a holiday period coming up. I've got a campaign coming up. I need 10 or 20 resources. I know that you have a flex staff. Can you provide those resources in a short period of time, right? And we provide those resources. And so that's the, you know, the number one kind of profile there. The number two profile is a candidate that might be a mid-sized company or a larger company, or like, hey, we've been around for a while. We know that we want to become best in class, but we don't know how to get there. Can you help us transform? And that's why the name of our second part of the service stack is Transform. And that's kind of that second client. How do I get to best in class? How do I get to deliver the ROI on CX, protect revenue, deliver revenue through the customer experience? And then the third type of client are clients that, you know, they're looking for SaaS solutions that can help them optimize their business, like our acquisition of Spreadsheet Scheduler, which we've rebranded Work Forward with a bunch of other our consultative services to it, right? So they're it's a smaller spin, but they're looking for a best-in-class tool or a segment of the tools that we have inside of our pillars to help them be successful. So those are the three, you know, types of clients that we often engage with. And people often say to me, hey, why didn't you just go single lane? Why didn't you just go after one client? And I said, well, that is why customer experience is broken. It's because everybody's doing single lane. So nobody inside of the enterprise is looking at the end-to-end. And that's what the service stack really does. And that's one of the disruptive natures of it, is that it looks at it end-to-end and it finds out along the journey where the problems are and how you can optimize your business, improve your business, enable your business, and deliver ROI.
I love it, because once they're in the stack, they don't have to go anywhere else, because the process is right there.
That's
and
right.
they move from step to step with you, and all along the way, they can stay within the stack and within Officium's offering. So it makes all the sense in the world, and that really is a great, great kind of idea that you had walking through San Francisco just a couple of years ago now. Now, let's talk about the relationship that a startup founder has, let's say, with the person that gives them the first, you know, the first investment. So what does that look like? Is it day to day, week to week? Is it just a check-in once in a while with Kevin? How does all that work?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing that I would say is there has to be trust between the two individuals, or maybe it's three or four individuals or whatever the group is. You have to have an element of trust, right? I think the second thing is you have to have folks that are, I mean, one of the advice that Kevin gave me early on is he said, hey, it's time to get scrappy. It's time to, put your elbow, as my mom would say, I guess, put your elbow, you know, grease to the wheel or whatever it is, and get going. And so he said, hey, let's get scrappy. Let's be different. Let's see how it goes. And then, I mean, I don't know. We check in maybe monthly, quarterly. I mean, we check in as needed as the business goes. Oftentimes, it's usually, you know, hey, I've got this challenge. I've got this issue I'm working through. I'm thinking about these different options. And so folks like Kevin, as well as, Kevin was a great initial mentor for us, but that's one of the reasons why we started our advisory board for on month three or four. As you'll see on our website, we've got about eight or nine other people that we use that maybe they didn't provide funding, maybe they did, doesn't matter. They provide us advice and mentorship, and they help us grow as a business. And that's one of the things that I learned. If there was a fifth key to starting a startup, is not have trust with that founder, and then have mentors around you that don't think like you and don't have experience that you have, so they can help you see things that you won't see. So you have kind of a 360 view.
I love that so much. It makes all the sense in the world. We talk about mentorship all the time, and for startups to build a good board, a good group of people that you can surround yourself with. And I think you hit on the key there, and that's very important. Rewind it again, because what Jonathan just said is very important. Don't just surround yourself with people that are going to tell you what you want to hear.
Yeah.
Surround yourself with people that give you a different peer view, a different sort of way to analyze things, and maybe, and hopefully don't always agree with you, because if everyone's agreeing with you all the time, you probably need to surround yourself with some other people that don't agree with you so you can get that 360 view. Is that what you're saying, Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean, I think it dovetails well with the term diversity of thought, which is, you know, when I was at Microsoft and other great companies where they just, you know, did a really good job of trying to enable and empower diversity of thought. We try to do the same thing inside of our culture. You'll look throughout our website and our company, and you'll see there's a you know, diverse group of people. And I try to surround myself. So if you met Scott, and the reason you haven't met Scott is he's not a front and center person. He doesn't like to be on video. I did convince him to get on a magazine one day with me, but he's a wonderful guy because he's the opposite of me. So if I'm the like, let's go do it, let's go grab it, let's do it, you know, he's the, okay, well, let's be pragmatic, let's be thoughtful, let's be sustainable, you know, and so he's a really kind of a yin and a yang. So we work really well together. I mean, other people in the past have said that he's the Jonathan Whisperer, but him and I work so well together. So that's, again, that trust between founders, you know, whether you start with two founders or three founders, usually you don't go above three, but it doesn't matter how many you have. You just have to have that trust. And so it just goes back to the importance of trust, and that you find people that you can trust that will not be afraid to say no, but they just don't say no. They say, well, what about this? So it's not just no in the negative sense. It's say, hey, have you thought about this? Have you considered this? You know, is this a decision that you need to make right now? Like, what's the urgency? Or is this something that we should think about and noodle on, you know, for the next 2 to 3 months and then make a decision? You know, only the person who's running the company, who's the founder, can ultimately make those calls. But you have to be thinking about that, because sometimes I'm more of a quick, decisive person. Scott's more pragmatic. And if you meet in the middle, you usually can build a sustainable company.
I love it. It makes all the sense in the world. So there you are getting scrappy, and there Scott is being deliberate, and you meet somewhere in the middle that makes everybody happy. And it's a great way to go, the yin and yang of being founders for a startup company. Now, one of the things you've also successfully been able to do with your Work Forward program is you've grown through acquisition. So that's something that you've done in the first 2 years, which is very interesting. So Jonathan, let's talk about that a little bit, because I think that's a nice way to build a company, to move forward in a very, very strong way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a term in the market, which, you know, Andy, build it or buy it, right? And so, you know, sometimes as you kind of grow your company, well, it should be all the time, really. If you're not learning as you grow, then you're failing. We have a term in our company from Nelson Mandela. He's like, I never lose, I win or learn. That's kind of our mentality. And what we learned is that there was something on the market that could amplify our business exponentially much faster than if we built it ourselves. And so we're like, hey, let's go and buy that company. And that's why we bought Spreadsheet Scheduler. We felt like it could amplify our company, and then we could also amplify its capabilities to the market to become much more well-known, much more profitable, and so forth. And so it was a perfect match into our service stack strategy. We didn't have yet that kind of capability for 10x scale that we wanted in the workforce management area. And so we went off and we bought Spreadsheet Scheduler, which, as you noted, is now Work Forward.
I love it. It's a great, great system, and you've made it even better. So congratulations on that. You know, when we talk about unlocking the startup key as a founder, Jonathan, one thing that comes to mind, and it's a question I've been wanting to ask you leading up to the show, is what percent of your time do you feel is spent looking at the company, let's say today, versus what percent of your time is forward thinking and thinking about the company where you need to be, like you mentioned, 3 months, 6 months, 12 yeah. months down the road?
Well, when I started the company, I would say 100% was on the today. Trying to, you know, you got a couple of clients, you got to keep them happy. As the company grows, it's a natural transition for a founder, and you should transition to looking for, okay, what does the competitive landscape look like for the next 2 to 5 years? How do I ensure that my company remains relevant? How do I ensure that, you know, I'm building the reputation, the brand, the credibility? How do I ensure that, you know, the renewal rates happen, those types of things? So it's almost one of the things, we have a lab, we're Officium Labs. So we have a lab inside the company. And inside of that lab is where we incubate these new ideas. So John Pompei and I, and often Nate and others in the company, will sit down on a consistent occasion and we'll dream up what is the next iteration of the future of service, because we're 2 years old and we're now irrelevant, if that makes sense. And so it's time to dream of, okay, how do we stay relevant? How do we stay disruptive? How do we stay in that mindset?
I love it so much. You know, somebody once said that at some point in time, there's going to be a company that's going to come around and put me out of business. And right. what right. I wish is, and what I hope for, is that that company that puts me out of business is me. So in other words, I've got this program, I've got this system, but yeah. I've got to keep on staying on the cutting edge and put my model sort of out of business to stay relevant so someone else doesn't do it to me. And what I just love, what I just heard, is, you know, we spoke about the incubator that started a couple of years ago, but now you have your own incubator within your own lab, which is a super great idea. I love that.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. I mean, you learn something that works and you don't break it, just keep doing it, right? And it's a successful model.
I love it, Jonathan. Now let's unlock the key a little bit more, because I want to take you back to the beginning. Okay, yeah. Because a lot of entrepreneurs are going to say to themselves, you know, here he is, he's built Officium, he's done, you know, the right steps, he's teaching me the right steps here on the show. But early on, when you sort of hit a pothole, or you hit a wall, or you hit a groundswell that you couldn't get through, over, or past, what was the mindset necessary as a startup founder to get through to the other side to make sure that, you know, you kept going?
Well, I think there's two elements that I hope that in the future will be taught in schools. And I think it's kind of, it's grit and critical thinking. And so I think that those two things help me as a founder to be successful. And Scott, when we hit those potholes, and when we hit things when they feel like we're going to pull our hair out, or we the solution isn't obvious, is kind of that grit and critical thinking. And if you wanted to trifecta it, you could add resilience to it. But if that could be taught in school, that'd be amazing. Oftentimes you learn those things through your experiences in life, and what you've gone through, and what you've conquered yourself. And the more that you conquer that, and you have that open mindset, and you have the kind of the positive mindset rather than the negative mindset, then I think you can accomplish anything. It may not look exactly like you thought it was going to look when you do it, but I mean, Officium doesn't look exactly like we thought it would look 2 years ago. I mean, it's actually bigger than we thought it was going to be two years ago, probably 3 or 4 times larger than we thought. And, you know, our product suite looks a little bit different. But in general, if you're heading in the right direction, I would say it's that grit. Well, it's that trifecta, right, that I mentioned earlier.
I love it. It makes all the sense in the world. But here's something that I have to ask you, because oftentimes I meet people that want to go start up a company. They have an idea, and they're very gritty. But maybe they're not the best critical thinkers.
Yeah.
And then I meet these great critical thinkers that man, they can't get off the couch because they don't have that grittiness to sort of get in the dirt and go get it done. So what happens in that case? Should the gritty person find the critical thinker and come together as a team? Is that really the way it should work?
Well, I mean, I do think that, as I noted earlier, Scott and I complement each other really well as founders. And I think that, you know, if you're looking for kind of a sixth key, it's that founding relationship. And that's probably the most important. If you have two founders or three founders that, you know, let's say you have the trust, but you don't have the other things where they complement each other. It doesn't have to be grit and critical thinking. It can be a variety of different things. Then you're not going to have as much success. So I think you're right. You know, the sixth key there is really making sure that founding relationship is complementary and that it has all the necessary components to get through the rough times.
I love it. So what's next at Officium? Because we spoke about it. We talked about it. We talked about the journey. I'm sure people are going to be listening to this show, you know, 2-3 times, because you're giving great pieces of advice, what I'm calling the keys to startup success. What's next at Officium? What's going on in your head now for the next, you know, for the next iteration?
Well, I think for us, it's all about scale, right? I mean, we have a product. We have the market loves our product. We have an amazing team. And so now it's time to continue to scale. If we made $10 million in the last 2 years, we need to make $10 million this year, right? And then 20 and 30 and 40 and so forth. But it's not really about the money. That's the way that the market, you know, sees our value. But the way that we see our value is, how do we scale our client? How do we scale our workers? How do we build that vision that we set out, which is the future of work and the future of service combined that delivers ROI of CX? How do we scale that? That's going to be the most important. And what are the product services or the disruptions that we need to be building today that are going to help us be successful? Maybe we become the whale in the market. Maybe we become, you know, the mid-sized fish, whatever the term for that is. It doesn't really matter. What matters is, are we delivering value to our client? Do we have a great culture? Are we scaling and helping people be successful? And then, you know, one of the things that we don't often talk about, that the underlying part of Officium, is it's Latin for to serve. And it's not only to serve our clients, but it's to serve, you know, the workers. And we intentionally work hard to hire workers in tier 2, tier 6 cities across the world so that we can help move, you know, the economic capital, you know, from tech hubs to local communities. I grew up in a small town in Texas, 7,000 people. And had I had the opportunity to have this job there, you know, that would have been amazing, right? But with now the world is flat with technology and information management and all these other things, let's make it flat economically. And so that's a kind of an underlying, I don't know if it's a secret vision, but it's an underlying vision of our company, that if we can become a unicorn type company, then we're essentially moving a lot of economic capital and capability to these local communities as well.
I love it. What a great result of starting something 2 years ago with a belief in yourself and your partner, Scott, and moving it forward and having so many people, the incubators, Kevin, and other investors and board members and board advisors, believing in your mission, believing in what you're doing. And the result of that is really a life-changing, earth-shattering type of a movement that can happen as you start, as you continue to impact these communities that you're speaking about. It's really remarkable. And I love the story so much, Jonathan. You know, when we think about young entrepreneurs, you know, you always hear it and you always sort of think about it. Mm-hmm. There's so many great people out there. There's great men and women that have an idea, but they have this woulda, shoulda, coulda story where they just can't get off that darn couch. They just can't get that first step, but they need to. What can you say to those folks that, man, you know, they have a great idea, but they just can't take the first step, Jonathan?
I think Nike has said it, right? Just do it, right? I mean, that's the Jordan thing. You just got to do it. I mean, if you hadn't done it, then, I mean, this might be too blunt, but if you haven't done it, then don't complain about it. Like don't reminisce that you should have done it. Like just do it. And if you don't do it, then don't feel bad that you hadn't done it. Right. You know, just do it or don't do it, but you know, pick a play, because startup founders, being a founder is not easy. That's one of the things that I've learned, as an executive for a number of years in large companies. And I thought those jobs were complex. And then I founded a company. So it's not made for everyone, which is why everyone doesn't succeed at it. But everyone can succeed at it, but it's their choice. And I also would say success doesn't come overnight. Oftentimes, I talk with individuals that want immediate returns. And if you're a startup founder, sometimes you get immediate success, and sometimes it takes a little bit of time. And so you need to be patient and make sure that you think through things and that you're pragmatic and that you don't, jump ship if you actually have a good idea. So those are some other things to think about. Those aren't keys, but those are definitely behavioral things that I learned along the way.
I love it. It makes all the sense in the world. I'm going to ask you a really tough question right now, Jonathan, because I want to take you back to when you were a child, or let's say a teenager. Yeah. And what does Jonathan Schroyer today wish he could have told Jonathan Schroyer as a teenager, maybe about business or entrepreneurship or about success or about, failure or about, pushing hard when times get tough? What would you have told your younger self, from many years ago?
I mean, I think oftentimes teenagers think everything is final. And that's the one piece of advice that I've given my younger self. It's like, hey, whatever happens, it's not final. Your life is 80 years. You know, Nelson Mandela, like I said earlier, win or learn, right? The lessons that I have learned in my life over the last, 40 some odd years of my life, nothing's final. Even if I make a mistake or if I learn something new or whatever today, by the time I'm 60 or 70, my life's going to be completely different. So just don't feel like it's the end of the world. Nothing is final. Everything is iterative. We're all learning. We're all growing. So don't be so hard on yourself.
I love it so much. That's great. That's great. And that's advice that everyone can listen to. A lot of people say, you want to have failures. I mean, of course, you want to mitigate as many as you can. But if you don't have failures, you're not pushing hard enough. And so many young people, they think that if they're a failure or they have a failure, that they're a failure, and they're not. It's just a failure along the process. And that just means you were pushing hard and you're going to have these little mini MBA events along the way where you can learn something, get stronger, get That's more right. powerful and move forward in your life. Right.
Yeah. So it's all about the growth mindset.
I love it, Jonathan. It makes all the sense in the world. I want to touch on one last thing because I know how important it is to you to listen to your clients. I know how important it is to listen to your customers. So when we're thinking about your success and the continued success at Officium, how important is it for you to listen to your customers? How important is it that when your customers say, hey, Jonathan, I love what we've got going here, but maybe if we added this or had this or could do this, that would make it even a more important sort of offering for me. Do you listen to your customers? Do you accept feedback? How do you take that feedback? And does that happen often?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a startup founder, sometimes you might get married to your own ideas. And sometimes those ideas are relevant and sometimes they're not, and your ego gets in the way. I think, from day one, when we started signing customers, we started building packages and approaches that would work for them. And we customized it. And we found in the early days, by customizing it to what the customers needed, then we figured out more clearly what our product and service offerings should be. And so we can't customize forever, but you also shouldn't try to sell something to a customer that doesn't need it or want it just for the sake of revenue, because that's just short term. It's basically jumping over dimes to get to pennies, right? So you need to make sure that whatever you're bringing to your customers, it's relevant and useful for them and that they feel good about it. You don't want them to have a bitter taste after they've purchased from you. So it's really important that everything that you provide to your customer or client, that they feel that there's value in it. We often say that we build our credibility and our relationships with our customers every day. It's not a monthly thing. It's not a yearly renewal contract thing. It's an everyday thing. And so you have to adjust, you have to listen, and you have to learn, or you're going to, fall behind.
I love it. It makes all the sense in the world. You know, we talk about those Harvard MBA, mini Harvard MBAs that you get along the way. And, you know, the students at these schools like Harvard, you know, or name any school, they're getting these case studies from professors. And what's happening is oftentimes the professors are giving these case studies that, you know, have been around for a couple, three, 4 years already. And the students are listening to the case studies. The case studies are already obsolete. And when you listen to someone like you who's on the front lines, that's doing it day in and day out, it's just so remarkable to hear this story. And I think it's going to be so valuable for our people to hear, especially the people that reached out to me and said, hey, what's the key to the startup? Let's unlock the startup key, which is what you've done here very, very successfully, Jonathan. One last question for you, and I know I've taken you over time, and I'm so sorry about that, but every time I talk to you, I want to stay on for an hour, but I know your time is very, very specialized right now, especially at this point in time in your life and what's happening at Officium. But I want to talk about that team just one more time, because I know how important it is for you to have a great team, and I know how important it's been for Officium's growth, and I also know that you've been on some great teams at world-class customers in your career. So let's talk just a little bit more about the impact of a great team. And is the team really the thing that can make or break an entire idea as a startup?
Well, I mean, I think the reality is customers build the company, but the heart of the company, the keystone, are your people, right? And I think I touched on this a little bit earlier in the interview as well. And it's so critical. Like, you have to, so in our lifeboat, so our startup, there was kind of, you know, four of us or so. It was me, Scott, Kristen, and Sean, right? And then Daniel came on, and then other great people joined us later. Is that you have to have people that believe in the vision and the mission, and that will be willing to make sacrifices to help you be successful, that who will be willing to be your ambassador along the way. People that will be willing to do things that they normally wouldn't be willing to do for a job, right? Because they believe so much in what you're trying to do, not only for the clients and the company, not only for themselves, but for the community. And that's why when we built our company from the ground up, you know, we started it with all three in mind, right? And because you have, I think any company that is going to be relevant today should be socially responsible. All right. That's just the way it should be. And so we knew that going in. We're like, hey, we want to be socially responsible. We want to be great to our people. We want to be great to our clients. And so when you have that trifecta together, you can attract amazing talent that are willing to go above and beyond. And then it's not only about building that culture in the beginning. It's about maintaining it and growing it. We use a tool called Office Vibe. I'm not marketing it, but it works really well for us. And it helps us on a, you know, weekly basis, understand the sentiment of our company as it grows. And every now and again, we'll see like a little dip and we'll be like, well, what's happening? What's going on? You know, because we're a decentralized company, so we don't see each other very often. So it's important for us to react, you know, fairly quick to feedback and learn from it. And so it really helps us on a week to week basis ensure that we can maintain that culture. And that is going to be one of our largest challenges as we scale, you know, 5X, 10X, and so forth, is to be able to maintain that startup culture. Not necessarily like the startup culture, but it's that culture where people are willing to believe in the vision. People are feel like they're trusted. People feel like they want to be part of something that has that trifecta, right? And continue to scale that. So, I mean, I can't say enough about the original team, about all the team that works with us now, the passion that they have. I mean, this, I know I get to be the mouthpiece of the company, but really the credit goes to the team that does the work on a day-to-day basis with our clients, that's working in the labs to incubate the new ideas, it's working in the you know, the back office with finance and HR and so forth, and all the work to keep the company running. All of those folks are critical to the success and have helped us deliver the vision that I'm just fortunate enough to talk to you about today.
Wow, that is so powerful, Jonathan. Again, it's really remarkable. And for anybody along the road, whether you're a startup founder or you're down the road a couple years, or you're, you know, you're in business for 10 or 20 years, really listen to what Jonathan just said, because That's the key. And it really comes through. It shines through with what you're doing with WorkForward, with your acquisitions, what you're doing at Officium. It's really awesome. Wow, this has been amazing. This has been exactly what the people have been asking for. Sort of take them along the ride. What's the key to, you know, building a startup? And I think you hit on all the key points from the perspective of a startup founder that's right in the middle of it, that has grit and passion and, you know, surrounded himself with great people. You've got great critical thinking yourself, and you've been able to assemble a great team. We also love your social mission. It makes all the sense in the world. So congratulations, Jonathan. I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on the show. I know that we've had you on before, but when I thought about the key to the startup or unlocking that startup key, I knew you were the right guy to talk to break down a very complex sort of analysis into a simple way that people can understand it. It's the same way that you've been able to put together such a strong platform, such a strong opportunity for your clients as well at Officium. And I know everybody loves it. Everybody loves what you're doing for them. And the people watching the show will have learned so much by having you on the show today, Jonathan. So thanks so much for coming on the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series again.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. And thanks. It's very humbling to hear you say all those nice things. But I'm learning just like everyone else. I'm happy that I could share it with some folks.